Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nygut. Glad to have you with us today. As usual, before we introduce the panel, I want to remind you that you can tweet us, stay in touch with us, be part of our dialogue by tweeting at PoliticsGPB, PoliticsGPB. We try to read at least some of your tweets when we're on the air. And you can now, of course, watch us on Facebook Live. See what's going on in this radio studio by going to the GPB page on Facebook Live. And we'd love to have you do that. And leave comments there as well, because we really enjoy reading your comments from Facebook Live page. We got a lot to talk about, so let's get right to it. Joining us today, Representative Mary Margaret Oliver, Democrat from Decatur. You haven't been in here for a while because you've been in session, and it's hard for you all to break away and get over here when you're in session.
A little bit hard, but I was here last week, Bill. You were in New York City.
That's right. You're exactly right, and I thank you for being here. And I never did thank Bradley George from GPB News, who hosted the show, so thank you for reminding me.
He did a great job.
Yeah, of course he did. Todd Rehm is with us, Republican political consultant. Also, I always called you the editor of the GeorgiaPundit.com. Is that a fair description of what you do with that?
That's what I call myself, curator, maybe.
All right. You want to read Georgia Pundit if you're interested in national, state, and local politics. Todd is a great aggregator of stories on all of those levels. And finally, joining us today, just back from a trip to Chicago, is our good friend from the AJC, Greg Bluestein.
Alexander Hamilton. My name is Alexander Hamilton.
Why, Greg, why did we play that little snippet?
Because my wife and I and two other couples went up to Chicago to see Alexander Hamilton, and it was worth every penny.
Well, I'm glad you're back, and you've got a lot to cover in the weeks ahead with the primary coming right up. You're the political reporter, one of the political reporters. I think lead political reporter is certainly what I would describe you as, whether the paper gives you that designation or not. And you contribute to the Political Insider blog, part of Politically Georgia, which is part of myajc.com, right?
Which is part of ajc.com. Layers upon layers upon layers.
It's Russian dolls, Greg. Russian dolls. Let's start by saying very quickly that the IRS issued a statement just a little while ago saying our computers are back to normal. Get your taxes in. They extended, Mary Margaret, the deadline for one day because they had computer problems yesterday.
These computer crashes are part of our life, and IRS did the right thing, extended it for a day. Okay. Too many people wait to the last day, and then the computer crashes, and you need a remedy.
Okay, so get your taxes in.
It was quite the shock to a lot of people who logged on yesterday and said, come back in 9999 to file your taxes.
Let's move on. We had some breaking news, really, in the last couple of hours, Greg. I'll ask you to share with us what's going on. We were all prepared as of yesterday afternoon when our producer, Tom Faust, started looking at some of the topics we'd want to discuss. We were all set to talk about the big endorsement that Democratic gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams got from Planned Parenthood for her candidacy. But about 2 hours ago, we got another big endorsement from
Georgia Equality, which is probably the most prominent leading LGBT group in Georgia. And another sort of stinging setback for Stacey Evans, who is also obviously pushing for those same endorsements. Abrams has locked up most of the left-leaning groups that are endorsing. She's locked up the lion's share. There's about one major group called the Georgia Federations for Teachers that has endorsed Evans, but Abrams has the brunt of the other supporters. And you know, whether or not that will have an impact on the vote remains to be seen, but these groups do have resources. They're going to put their logo behind Stacey Abrams, and they're going to urge their supporters to not just vote for Stacey Abrams, but also get out and knock on doors and donate money to Stacey Abrams.
Todd, Greg makes a good point. These organizations are giving endorsements. That doesn't necessarily mean votes follow, but I would think to a certain extent money may follow. Yes, in other words, when you start showing that kind of momentum to people who have checkbooks, that encourages them to write, doesn't it?
I think that's the typical pattern on the Republican side, certainly. But I think Stacey Abrams' campaign is built to take advantage of people power. And I think that she will get more out of an organizational endorsements if they're accompanied by shoe leather than the average candidate. In the last 2 or 3 years, we've seen a dramatic expansion in door-to-door by both volunteer and paid. And during the 6th District special election, so many special interest groups were doing their own door-to-door programs that we were getting our doors knocked on multiple times, sometimes in a single day.
So it's going to be interesting to see. Mary Margaret, is this a sign that it's all heading Stacey Abrams' way?
I don't think it's readable from my view. Planned Parenthood is a national organization. Stacey Abrams is endorsed by Emily's List and has a national profile and a national group of supporters. The issues are not different from these two very exceptional women. I know there's consternation among some about these kind of endorsements, but I think it's obviously positive for Stacey Abrams.
Well, go ahead.
I also wanted to say this. I think that it's also positive for Republicans. I think that Stacey Abrams is a better candidate for us to be running against because she is so heavily invested in this model where you turn out non-traditional voters, voters who don't have the habit of voting themselves. And I think if that were going to work, her efforts in 2014 or 2016 on behalf of various candidates using the method she's trying to use now would have been more successful. I don't think it's going to be enough this year.
It's a fascinating example of two different theories of political science. My Republican colleagues all tell me they want to run against Stacey Abrams. I never know whether that's kind of a little bit of a trick or not, but that's what they say. I think that Stacey Abrams' political science model is fascinating and is based on real work and real science. Stacey Evans' political model is more based on returning, I think, some...
That yellow dog Democrat base.
The suburban soccer mom, to use an old term. And that strategy, I thought, would work for Michelle Nunn and didn't.
Okay, but let me... Okay, so we've already gotten a bunch of tweets about this. So, for instance, on the negative side, Bradley Griffin tweets, nothing screams, don't elect this person louder than the organization, than the endorsement from an organization responsible for 60-plus million aborted children. I think that's a characterization, Greg, of Planned Parenthood that the organization itself and many people within it would take issue with.
Sure. But also, I mean, remember, there's very little gray area between these two candidates when we take these two endorsements into account on the two big issues they're around, gay rights and abortion. You had Stacey Evans, who is a board member of NARAL. She fought the same sort of legislation that Stacey Abrams fought. And same thing with gay rights. Both of them marched in the gay pride parade last year. But at the same time, these organizations are making a stand by coming out. Usually you'd see them come out at the primary. They're coming in really early now, and they're not saying exactly why they're backing Abrams over Evans, other than they went through a thorough vetting.
I got to interrupt. We are in a pledge period. I think listeners understand that this is what's going on because you've been listening to the station, which means we really want to pause for just a few minutes to let you hear how you can support Political Rewind on Second Thought, all of the NPR shows we do here. So let us break right now and turn it over to the folks who want to tell you how you can help sustain our programming. We're back on Political Rewind. Just to amplify Tom Barkley and Pat Marcus's message a minute ago, you know, we've been taking Political Rewind to other cities in the state. We were in Savannah not long ago, in Macon the other day, and you turn out in such big numbers to tell us how much you like the show, which gratifies us enormously. We're thrilled about that. We want to be able to continue taking the show on the road. We want to do some shows that people here in Metro Atlanta can come see, and to be quite honest with you, that costs us a little more money than doing the show in the studio. So for whatever reason, we hope you will support Political Rewind with a donation today, if you can do it. Okay, let's get back. Greg Bluestein, let me start with you on this. The governor told Anthem, which owns Blue Cross and Blue Shield, a while back that he wanted a solution to the stalemate they had with Piedmont Health Systems or he was going to intervene and do something about it. 600,000 people in the state get their insurance through Blue Cross Blue Shield, and they couldn't make a deal with to pay for services with Piedmont. Governor stepped in, and he got tough and got a deal.
Yeah, and the reason he got so personally involved is because not only are they 600,000 people in limbo, but many of them were state employees, retirees, or family members of the state employees. So there's a lot of people in the state dole, basically, who are directly impacted by this.
Well, be careful. You don't really mean state
dole.
I mean state.
Bad word.
Mary Margaret Oliver gets her insurance from the state of Georgia.
Bad word.
On the state's ledgers, I should say.
On the hard-earned. Yeah.
But anyhow, go ahead. Yeah. We know you didn't mean that.
Who are directly impacted by this. And so the governor set an ultimatum on Monday, essentially saying, you guys better get a deal together by Tuesday afternoon. And there was basically three different threats out there. One of them was to open re-enrollment for people who are Blue Cross insured by Blue Cross to go seek other insurers. And also he was threatening to basically allow more competition to both Blue Cross's contract with the state and also to Piedmont's exclusivity in some markets around Georgia. We're not sure how he was going to do that, but there was essentially threats on both sides of the negotiating table to push both of them together, and it worked with a handshake agreement right before the deadline.
Yeah, you know, Mary Margaret, I was fascinated by this. Certainly, those 600,000 people, including you, are really happy that you still have Piedmont's health services as an option, but. The governor, what an activist move by the governor. He's really stepping up in a situation like this.
Well, what fascinated me is the fact that he did step up, which does reflect, I think, the crisis, over the cliff, dangerous status of our healthcare systems. I was hearing from many folks who had this contract interruption, who are in the middle of very sensitive, important medical matters. In my neck of the woods, I'm in the Emory umbrella. I watched DeKalb Hospital, which is a significant, large, thriving public hospital, go under and has been taken over by Emory. The impact of that is something I'm watching closely. We are in a very dangerous position in relation to these major institutions who are going to fight hard to stay alive and fight hard for what they want, their profit margin in the for-profit crowd, and just survival with quality care to the folks like Emory and Grady.
Todd, do you think conservatives have any concern about a governor stepping into a private business issue and deciding he had better take this on? Should the market take care of itself, or am I barking up the wrong tree?
I will say that it doesn't present you a purely ideological question because the state is one of the largest customers.
Right.
And so that removes it from the realm of pure ideology. But I would say that one of the things that I've learned about Governor Nathan Deal is that he is very much an active, hands-on, technical manager of state business. Wake him up at 4 a.m. in the middle of the night and ask him what the rainy day fund is, and he'll tell you to the penny. And it's that behind-the-scenes management that I think has served us well when we have a lot of these issues. I work for one of the hospital groups, and it's true that both on the profit side and the nonprofit side, it is a major crisis that still is not getting, we think, sufficient attention from the state of Georgia. But I think we're going to see not so much this kind of problems, but we're going to see a lot more hospitals and local governments trying to figure out how do they keep such an important
that
resource.
Is an irony, Greg. The legislature didn't come up with big solutions for failing hospitals, but the governor steps in on this one.
Yeah, and by the way, if the governor's wonkiest about any single topic, it's probably healthcare. When he was in the U.S. House, this was a passion of his. He can go in depth about the sub policies of different waivers and different impacts it would have on the federal and state government. But this is also to underscore what a big development this was this week, because it's not only impacting more than 600,000 Georgians, but also these are two titans in the healthcare industry that have been vastly expanding their footprints. And every other healthcare firm was watching this outcome because Blue Cross and Piedmont both have ties throughout the industry, and they were both watching to see what happens when the next big contract comes up. And Piedmont, of course, in particular, had just bought up hospitals in Columbus, in Athens, in Macon. So all over the state, really.
I would add to the governor's portfolio of wonkishness, energy policy.
Yeah, and criminal justice.
Public service commissioners have told me that he has an unequaled expertise in energy policy, at least at the federal level.
I agree totally that he is an activist, not a word he might like. Hmm. Wonky might be a better word he might like. He's more substantive. He has a very detailed knowledge of state government. One of the reasons I admire him so much, and one of the things that makes me incredibly sad, is on the Republican side, if Republican leaders prevail in this election, we will have not a similar depth of experience, activism, or wonkiness.
You know what's interesting about that, though, Mary Margaret, is I think when Nathan Deal became governor 7+ years ago, there were many people who thought perhaps he had established by the time he was ready to leave Congress a very conservative philosophy, including at one point actually kind of getting into the birther camp a little bit. There were many doubts about Nathan Deal when he took office. You'll remember that.
I remember Nathan Deal as a Democrat that I followed as chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and I supported him in his congressional campaign. He also was my first juvenile court judge 40 years ago, so he and I go back.
You go way back. All right, we got to get to another break, and again, we are pausing in Political Rewind today, as we will for a few days now, because it's time for us to say to you, please help us sustain our programming here at GPB. So I'm going to go back to Tom Barclay and Pat Marcus to tell you how you can do that. We're back on Political Rewind with State Representative Mary Margaret Oliver, Democrat from Decatur, Republican political consultant and editor of GeorgiaPundit.com, Todd Rehm, and AJC political reporter Greg Bluestein. The Bricklayers Union wanted us to know in a tweet to Politics GPB, we support Stacey Abrams because she supports our labor unions and fights for our working families. We got a tweet from a good friend of ours of this show's, Catherine Cummings, who basically says to us, I'm looking for it right now, I'm eager to vote for the candidate who earned these endorsements, meaning the ones that came to Stacey Abrams that we discussed. Councilman Khalid says, there weren't enough rural white Democrats to keep John Barrow elected to the U.S. House. How could there be enough to elect Stacey Abrams statewide? And finally, on our Facebook Live page, Cindy Simpson says, I want Governor Deal to step up about our voting machines. I'd like him to convene a nonpartisan committee to do research. In fact, Greg Bluestein, Brian Kemp has beaten him to the punch on that one. He's put together a group to study voting machines.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously a 2019 issue now, right, that the legislature didn't take it up, didn't vote on the final compromise on this. But Governor Deal did say he was open to whatever solution lawmakers came up with. And we've heard from most of the gubernatorial candidates who want some form of paper ballot.
Mary Margaret, it's got to be a disappointment, I would think, that the legislature was not able to reach some conclusion, was not able to establish some mechanism for doing new machines.
I was on that study committee and the big committee and the backroom committees and all of that, and everybody agrees that Georgia's machines are outdated, must be replaced. Everybody agrees there has to be a paper element. There has to be some element, the paper, that is auditable. And where we may have a problem, does everybody agree that it has to be done by 2020? If it has to be done by 2020, then we really needed to pass something in the 18 session in order to get the money in the flow.
Todd?
As well as it's a Herculean task to implement that across 159 counties and make sure that the populous counties as well as the very small rural counties have sufficient training and resources to pull it off.
So do we believe that the results of the Georgia votes in 2018 and 2020, if nothing is done, there may be reason to be somewhat skeptical about whether the results are accurate, Mary Margaret?
I'm not very much far into the conspiracy theories.
Is that what it is, a conspiracy theory?
Part of it is that these are old machines. We've not had problems with them. There's no real evidence of hacking, of changing, of dysfunction, but they're old and they cannot be audited. And I think there is a real sincere need to replace them. How much is it going to cost? When can we do it? And is there going to be, and most importantly to me, a buy-in, or are there still going to be people who believe what we do is inadequate?
And the issue with the age, in my mind, is not so much that it's old and therefore it's bad. It's that you can't buy replacements anymore.
Exactly.
You can't buy new equipment anymore. And I believe it was Columbus, Muskogee County a couple years, they bought a trailer load of retired equipment from Colorado so that they would have spare parts. And I think they've been sharing spare parts with other jurisdictions.
We had a pilot program in Rockdale this past fall with a major vendor financing it as to one of the vendors' options for paper ballots. And I just don't know where we're going to get the buy-in to what paper ballot.
Yeah, and these run on Windows 2000 software that isn't even updated by Microsoft anymore.
Greg, I'm not sure. Maybe one of you does know. I don't know the answer. Mary Margaret, you probably would. Does the legislature have to pass a bill, or is that a preferable approach so that there's some bipartisan buy-in to get the new machines?
The legislature has to pass the money. I mean, it's going to be a $40 to $100 million issue, and without the money, it doesn't matter who's in charge.
Of course.
My concern was, do we give the entire decision to Brian Kemp, which is one version of the facts? Another concern was, do we allow Brian Kemp to work with the Democratic and Republican nominees for Secretary of State and have a February 1st deadline? I mean, it's confusing. Who's in charge?
And the advocates for some sort of new system from both sides of the issue say, from both parties, say that it's not that these have been hacked so far. It's that they could be hacked. And there was just a demonstration at Georgia Tech the other day that showed how easily it is to hack these systems for computer scientists. Just get right in there and change the outcomes.
You know that no machine in any precinct is on the Internet. You know that. How do you hack something that's not on the Internet?
And I think that's part of it is that they have to be physically secured. But if you cannot physically get at them, you cannot hack them from outside. And that's why I think that the idea that because it's Windows 2000 means it's bad somehow, I think it's great because it doesn't have all of the outside communications built in.
It doesn't go through the air.
But I think it also just means the software is buggy and that when there are issues with it, it can't be updated because there are no updates to the bugs.
I'd argue that's not the case because I've never seen the blue screen of death on a voting machine, and they really don't crash. You don't hear about that happening very often.
I had a campaign last year, so I got into the weeds about this a little bit. This didn't happen in other campaigns. First time it happened for me. They post the precinct votes on the window of the precinct.
Every year. And those of us who do this for a living and have no meaningful life spend election night traveling from precinct to precinct and taking pictures of those.
I have sent volunteers to take the picture and email it to me.
But I think you point out part of the problem is that there is nobody more invested in voting procedures than politicians. And you've got 236 of them in that funny looking building with different ideas about
something
what's good for
we them. Care about.
Greg, let's just finish this subject quickly if we can. The Brian Kemp group that's come together. Do they have a deadline for reporting out? And is it a matter of reporting something out? Well, that could then be turned into legislation for the 2019 session. Is that where they're headed?
Yeah, coming up with some sort of consensus for 2019, which, of course, is what they aim to do this year with this, all these legislative committees who are looking at the same issue. But, of course, a lot of it depends on who wins. And if Brian Kemp's likely to move forward on his commission's plans if he wins. But Casey Cagle and Stacey Abrams and Stacey Evans and all the other candidates have different ideas.
Okay.
And John Barrow,
exactly.
Paulus Wood tweets us, what's wrong with the old Scantron systems? How hard can it be to maintain 50? What is a Scantron system? Anybody know?
It's what people my age and possibly Greg's age took AP exams and stuff
like
that like on.
The bubble. I love that. I would love to vote that way.
And hey, if you're going to complain about Windows 2000, I'm going to complain about Graphite 2000 AD.
Using
the driving
two pencils.
Technology.
Does anybody remember the term hanging Chad one of the questions I ask in these.
Well,
rooms.
A hanging Chad was different because it was a punch system, not a fill-in-the-bubble system, right?
There are
right?
people who want a pencil and a piece
right.
of paper and a hanging Chad.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, we're not going back to that. All right. Look, we're going to take another break because, again, this is a time of year we really need your support. You know, we do this twice a year. It's not that often. And we really do for our programming here, Political Rewind, Two Way Street, On Second Thought, the NPR programming that we buy that you listen to. We rely on you to help us pay for all of that programming. So let me send it back to Tom and to Pat, and they can tell you more and encourage you to support GPB right now. All right, Pat Marcus and Tom Barclay. I will, you know, here's the problem with the T-shirt. If you're watching us, and if you're not watching us on Facebook Live, please go to it now, because Greg Bluestein, you've just come from what, one of your kids' schools?
Service day at one of my kids' schools.
So you're wearing a T-shirt and shorts.
Usually in a suit and tie, but today, dressing
up. And now Pat Marcus and Tom Barclay are trying to get me to put on a GPB gift T-shirt for this show. I would do it in a heartbeat, but yes, Todd Ream?
I'd like to get one of those T-shirts for my Brookhaven mayor, John Ernst. He's an avid fan, and I know he's listening right now.
We will figure out. I didn't hear what the level of the contribution was, Todd, but once you make it, we'll, of course, $10 a month. We'll figure something out, Todd. Let's Greg, we talked about the Democratic gubernatorial contest, but now there's an interesting dynamic going on over on the Republican side. Casey Cagle just got last week the huge endorsement from the NRA, despite Brian Kemp's best efforts to snatch it away from him. Kemp was out there publicly saying to the NRA, this guy is not your friend, essentially, right?
He said to the NRA, you've been Casey Cagled. He accused Cagle of not living up to his promise to kill any tax break that would benefit Delta, because a more minor concession to Delta was found in another bill that passed the legislature.
Okay, and so the NRA did endorse Cagle, and Brian Kemp comes back and tries a move that he hopes might take some of the wind out of the NRA sails for Cagle, right?
Yeah, he said, Cagle might have NRA, but I have an NRA board member who is also nationally known. And that is Bob Barr, who ran for president of the Libertarian flag, was a former Republican congressman, and still a well-known and influential name in Georgia conservative circles.
Todd, give us the Republican take on the value of having Bob Barr come out to endorse you with the NRA endorsement on the other side for Cagle.
Let me say this. Bob's been a client of mine. He's a friend of mine. And one of the nicest notes I've received in the last couple weeks was from him. More than just simply being able to say I have an NRA board member backing me is you have somebody who can go out to gun shows, gun conventions, gun organizations, and speak on your behalf as a not just a surrogate, but as somebody who has been at those conventions and at those organizations every single chance he gets for the last 20 years, as well as I would not be surprised if a few prominent folks in the industry may follow up with some contributions as well.
I have no credibility and no interest in discussion and no real opinion about how the NRA helps Georgia.
Let's remind people that you had some gun safety legislation, including bump stock legislation, which got nowhere this session.
Bump stock got nowhere, and a majority of Georgians support a ban on assault weapons. We've discussed this a number of times, and I'm not the person to ask about the quote-unquote value of the NRA support.
Well, let me go to a different topic. We talked about it on the show the other day, Mary Margaret Oliver, but I know it's one that's of importance to you. And because you are a state representative, I'd really love to get your take on this and throw it out to everybody else. We're waiting to hear whether the governor is going to sign, let lie on the table, or veto a bill which would allow Eagles Landing to carve out territory from a municipality, Stockbridge, which would set a precedent that many people are stunned could possibly happen here. Where do you stand on that? You want him to veto this, I assume.
I want him to veto it. The term cannibalization was used in the Capitol in a very ugly debate on the Eagles Landing versus Stockbridge. 10 years ago, Alina Parent, when she was in the House, and I introduced legislation to modify the systems for cityhood. That legislation has been reintroduced and discussed, and people bloviate about it all the time, but there's absolutely no progress in making any sensible, measured economic development type analysis for new cities. And the issue of Stockbridge losing 40% of its base and losing ability to pay for bonds is a pretty serious precedent.
Todd?
And I think there's also the precedent of taking prime commercial real estate out of an existing city.
So, Greg, I don't quite understand the political dynamic that took place at the legislature over this. This is a very dramatic development. What were the factors involved in this thing?
The group that wanted to sort of secede from Stockbridge and create its own city said they wanted even more local control than they got with Stockbridge. And one of the arguments they made was one of demographics, but not racial demographics, but financial demographics, saying it would be easier to lure in big type of luxury businesses and other upscale developments if they have a higher...
Yeah, but it suggests that any legislator mm-hmm. who lives in a municipality could suddenly be vulnerable to another entity
what
taking...
What does that mean to Buckhead?
Yes.
Todd, every... cityhood, has it been an issue of I'm taking your commercial property? The contest between Tucker and alleged Vista Hills was about Northlake. What's different here is the cannibalization of another city's.
That's exactly what I mean, because we are in Brookhaven, we're cheek to jowl with Chamblee, with Dunwoody, with Sandy Springs. And at some point in the future, I can see bidding wars for large commercial properties to say, hey, who will give us more money
There's already bidding wars. I represent Chamblee, Brookhaven, Decatur, totally surrounded by this. Choa jumping to Brookhaven with a $6 billion, gazillion dollar hospital.
Children's Health Care of Atlanta. Let's be clear on what that stands for.
It's a methodology, it's a process, it's a grand political activity that's got to have some attention, and the Republican leadership is not interested in paying attention.
Real quick.
The governor hasn't said what he's going to do, but I think this will be a real tough sell. He met with bond analysts on Tuesday in New York, and the AAA bond rating is crucial. Right. For
I got it. We are out of time for today's show. Representative Mary Margaret Oliver, Todd Ream, Greg Bluestein, we're so glad to have you here for the show today. And Todd Ream, it's the first time we've seen you. In a few weeks. And I know a lot of our listeners feel the way all of us who work with you here do. We want to extend to you our condolences on the loss of your wife, Stephanie. And I have watched you deal with this for 18 months, and your devotion has been a remarkable thing to see. And I'm also glad that you want to be back in the mix with us. So thank you for being here today. And again, our deepest sympathies to you.
Thank you.
All right, that's going to about do it for us. I hope you'll be with us again on Friday for another Political Rewind. Let's throw it back over to Pat and to Tom so they can tell you how you can be a part of what we're doing here at GPB.